Sorry, I have no disclosures, and I'm very pleased to be here today presenting on this new publication that we just released. It's hot off the presses as of last week, and there are a few copies in the back. I don't want to take them back with me, so please take them, and I'm going to explain at the end to how you can get copies if you'd like additional copies. So I'm here today presenting on the team that you see here out of our North Carolina headquarters office that worked on this resource for the last year and a half. In addition to the headquarters staff that worked on it, I also want to just mention our funder, USAID, and our partnering organization, YPEER, which is an international youth peer education group that's funded through UNFPA. And also mentioned that we worked very closely with our FHI country offices, in particular in Kenya and Tanzania, to put together these guidelines. And I also just want to mention that the photographs throughout the presentation are from either FHI peer education programs out of our country offices or AID-funded peer education programs, youth peer education programs. I also would like to say that these guidelines were created to fill a gap that we saw in international guidance, in particular developing countries around peer education, but they could certainly be applied. They're written in a generic enough form, but they could be applied to a domestic setting as well. So for purposes of the presentation and for this tool, we define peer education as a process with trained and supervised by adults, youth peer educators providing informal or more organized, structured educational activities with their peers. We are not including kind of one-time health education events or peer counseling, which we are setting aside as a different type of service delivery. And we were interested in looking at activities that are aimed at developing knowledge and attitudes and behaviors, particularly around HIV prevention and uptake of contraception and condom use. So when we started working on these guidelines, the first thing we did was look at what the evidence shows on peer education. And there is some evidence out there about the effectiveness of peer education. What we found is that there's the potential to reach a large number of youth, in large part because peer educators are not paid, so you can train an army of peer educators and send them out into community, and they can reach many of their peers that way. That, in fact, there was the ability to positively influence attitudes and knowledge about sexual and reproductive health, and in particular around decreasing the number of sexual partners and increasing condom use and other forms of contraception. There was also, we found, an increase of uptake of sexual and reproductive health services, in particular by vulnerable young people. So out-of-school youth or street youth were populations that were particularly able to receive messages from peers. We also found that peer education does, in fact, improve community norms. But in order for it to do that, there need to be other systems in place in addition to the peer education program. So other adult-led programming, like youth-friendly services and youth-friendly clinic services. What you don't see is the unknown, which is whether or not we're actually having an impact on HIV rates and unplanned pregnancy among youth. Some of the challenges in peer education, there are a lot, as many of you may know, and many of them relate to cost. Training and supervising is expensive and time-consuming. These are not trained adult professionals. These are youth, generally 10 to 24 and sometimes younger. So they require a lot of adult supervision, mentoring, support to get them to a place where they're able to provide quality programming. There's a high turnover of educators. You know, youth tend to be on the move. They grow up, they get jobs, they go on to school, and we lose them. And so retention is difficult. Establishing meaningful youth involvement, and by that I mean not just asking youth to be peer educators, but involving them from everything from the beginning of program planning and monitoring and evaluation, training of other peer educators, and service delivery. So really asking adults that are trained in this field to relinquish some of their platform for delivering education and relinquishing it to youth, which can be challenging. We know that peer education alone is not enough, that it's not delivered in a vacuum, and that there need to be other services, as I mentioned before, like youth-friendly counseling and testing services or youth-friendly contraceptive options. So if peer educators are telling their peers they need to use condoms, but kids can't access condoms, then it's not going to have an impact. And then in particular, this is where these guidelines came, was to try to look at this challenge. The effectiveness varies considerably. So we found there are a lot of peer education programs throughout Africa without using any standards or guidelines or doing any monitoring and evaluation. There's sort of a lack of really looking at what the outcomes are. What we did find is that the effectiveness is often high for the peer educators themselves. It's a group that we can follow generally. We can keep in touch with them and find out how they're doing, and that their outcomes are usually great. They have all the support from adults. They're learning how to be leaders and they're being mentored, and that the outcomes are the best with them. We're less sure about the kids that they're delivering services to. So the guidelines, again, are based on recommendations that have been tested and are useful. It's there's a framework for quality assurance, the opportunity to increase a program's capacity. And importantly, one of the things we found when we talked to peer education programs, particularly again in Africa, was that they wanted to be able to report to their donors that they were using standards that were evidence-based in the delivery of their services. That was very valuable to them, so they can actually show them these guidelines and share with their donors how they're delivering the service. So again, the tool was created based on research findings on both youth and adult-led peer education, lessons from peer educators around the world, and experiences of experts in peer education. We adapted portions from the national standards in Tanzania and also from a document that FHI produced along with, again, UNFPA and YPEER in 2005 on the standards for youth peer education programs. And again, there's an emphasis on quality youth participation, so including youth from the beginning, from the program planning stages all the way through to monitoring and evaluation, and an emphasis on how to do sort of low-cost monitoring and evaluation in a way that's compelling for donors and for community. The tool is directed at policymakers such as government health officials, program managers, supervisors, and trainers, so all the adult folks who are involved in peer education. Peer educators themselves, there's some curricula and kind of examples of icebreakers and other materials in the guidelines. And then an important group are other stakeholders, like other adult stakeholders, teachers, faith leaders, other adult groups in the community that have a vested interest. So within the guidelines, there's an overview of peer education, similar to what I said at the beginning, kind of how we define peer education, how we think about that. The actual guidelines, I'm going to just quickly walk through those. There's a checklist and action planning tool that I'll show you in just a second. And then also there's a collection of annexes, tools, logic models, group exercises. There's a sample code of conduct and other resources such as curricula that peer educators could use. So there are six areas that we provided guidance on. And we started with program planning, and then we went through recruitment and retention of peer educators, training, leading peer education sessions, supervision and program management, and again, monitoring and evaluation is a very important component. So if you pull out monitoring and evaluation just as an example of how the guidelines are set up, within that, there are specific guidelines on the various areas of monitoring and evaluation. So beginning with setting the indicators, setting indicator targets, developing a monitoring and evaluation plan, using appropriate tools, gathering the baseline and the follow-up data, and then documenting the program. So you'll see this is an example pulled from the guidelines. We will list those bullets, and then we invited our peer education programs across the globe that we knew were doing good work to give us examples of how they were fulfilling that guideline. So you'll see just a small, and they're brief. It's designed to be kind of a quick and dirty guideline, not a cumbersome set of guidelines. And then we also, wherever possible, extrapolated something from the research. So again, just a thumbnail, something about what the research is telling us related to that guideline. So if you look, for example, at using appropriate monitoring tools, you see the bullets here about how to achieve that guideline, developing the tools that are easy to understand and adapting them, piloting the tools, and then training staff to use the tools after they've been developed. Then an example from the field on how an organization is using this, and in this example you can see peer educators were filling out evaluations after they were delivering peer education themselves based on what they perceived their participants to be learning, and then when asked by the program planner to actually have the participants fill them out, the peer educators sort of got the importance, they bought into the monitoring and evaluation, they increased the quality of their data, and they felt proud of what they were able to do. Again, looking at gathering baseline and follow-up data, then just a quick little bit of the current research on what we have found related to peer education and gathering baseline and follow-up data. And then after the guidelines, there is this research, this checklist and action planning tool. That's when we piloted this tool in the field, we found that this was actually where we got the most feedback about the value of these guidelines. The guidelines were appreciated and the programs really liked them, but what they really liked was this hands-on tool that's designed for both the adults that are delivering or managing the peer education program and the peer educators themselves, the opportunity to walk through all of the guidelines, figure out which ones they were already meeting, which was, you know, just a boost of morale if there were some that they were meeting, and then determine if there were those that they could do better on or that they needed to have some increased capacity around, develop the next steps, develop a plan for who was going to do them. And we really encourage that the youth peer educators work with the adults involved in the program to go through this tool together and then share the action steps so that it's not just the adults, but that the peer educators themselves can share in the improvement of the service. Okay. So next steps for the guidelines. FHI is fortunate to manage the content for the Interagency Youth Working Group, the IYWG for USAID. And within that, we have a website, which I'll give you the address. There's also some postcards in the back that have that you can pick up that have our new web address on it. And so we're using this newly revised website. I'm presenting on that this afternoon if anyone's interested. And that has some features that are new to us. So for example, we're going to be involved in a global launch and dissemination of this document by facilitating some online discussions with peer educators themselves and other experts in peer education, sharing back and forth dialogue about how they've used the guidelines and what's been helpful and successful for them. We've also invited peer educators from around the globe to blog about their experience with the guidelines, and so we're inviting them to blog as they're involved in a training or some other delivery of peer education in an informal way where we hope to kind of connect them with other peer educators about how they've seen success or challenges with these guidelines. And then finally, just, you know, as most of you probably know, as soon as you print something and you're happy with it, you realize there's something you wish you had done differently or you wanted to beef up, and we do hit on gender and power differentials in these guidelines between adults and youth and between gender, but we're feeling the need for that to be stronger, and we're hearing from the field that, for example, when you have an adult male that's supervising girls that are providing peer education, what the power differential means for that, or when you have mixed groups of kids and who the peer educator is. So we're in the process now of developing a gender addendum that will go out electronically and also on the website in print form to accompany the guidelines. If you're interested in peer education, the IYWG has a peer education toolkit on our website. You can download or order print copies of all those materials. We also, if you sign up for InfoNet, which I think is what you're referring to, it's an electronic dissemination and synthesis of the research, the most cutting-edge research on youth sexual and reproductive health globally, and also tools and resources that are available in the field. So our new website is just iywg.org. This old site should direct you to the new site, and you also are welcome to email me if you would like print copies of the guidelines, or if you'd like the link to download them yourself. Thank you.